Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
And he swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, Frank Lee, it's over!
The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It's episode 154. This is the official podcast of gaining a ton of weight in November, not because of Thanksgiving, but because of all the six Thanksgivings that you have before Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Before we get going, remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, wherever you're getting your podcast. Subscribe, rate 5 stars, leave a comment. All that stuff on all your platforms. Check it out on YouTube. We're on the WEI channel. Find the Play Tessie playlist there. Hit the thumbs up. Subscribe to WEI. And find us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. I'm here with Sammy and I'm here with Pat. And man, we got a ton of stuff to get into on this episode. Because the last episode we released was a Who Says No. The last like full real episode that we released for you guys was a day early last week. It was on Wednesday. So if you're listening on drop day, it's a Monday. So it's been a while and a lot has happened. Like that episode we released, like Nick Pivetta declined the qualifying offer and we were talking about Shane Bieber, which I think I can speak for all of us. We all like the idea of Shane Bieber, right? I know, Sammy, you do. Pat, do you like idea of Bieber? You like that?
Secondary edition, yes. Yes.
Yeah. We like Bieber. Not much on that front since we recorded that episode. But a lot has happened, and we're going to talk about it. And it all starts with Sam Kennedy's interview with the Boston Globe with Michael Silverman. I put a video out on Twitter because I was really excited about it. It was, I kid you not, it was the best quotes we've heard from the Red Sox in years, in at least a half decade, at least since Dave Dombrowski was still with the team. Since they changed philosophies or whatnot, and maybe they're course correcting right now. Maybe it was all part of the plan. I don't know. But some of these quotes and some of the themes from this interview, it was the best I've seen in years. He talked about being in on elite starting pitching. He basically said they're going to try and get Soto. He basically said they're going over the CBT, the luxury tax line, or at least they're open to it. He said they're able to take on another mega deal in addition to Devers. Like, he got into specifics. Like, it wasn't the general, we want to get back to competing and we're willing to do whatever it takes to do it that we usually get from them. It was specifics. It was, we need to get back to where we want to go. We want to win 90 to 95 games and we're going to do these things to do it. We're willing to spend the money. He said we're going to invest more than we have in years past. And I know we dissect quotes on the show a lot. I don't necessarily want to dissect this one because I think that it's pretty common. It's a common understanding at this point in the circles of the league, in with people in the know. And I think it's really at this point common knowledge amongst fans that the Red Sox are going to spend money, that the Red Sox are going to make moves to compete. So I want to get into this little by little, but I want to kick this to Sammy real quick before we do that, because Sammy notoriously on this show a lot, and he's been right to do it, has said, don't read into a word that Sam Kennedy says. This is his job. We hear these things all the time, and the words are not backed up by actions. So you gotta follow the actions. And he's been right. But these quotes are different. I'm curious, Sammy, do you agree with that? Do you think it's different?
Yeah, I think they're a little bit different. Like you said, Kennedy got a little bit specific. It is hard for me to get, you know, rah-rah excited about quotes, but they're definitely the best ones we've heard from him in a while. I do think the Red Sox are going to spend, but at the end of the day, I give them, you know, no credit for good quotes. That doesn't do anything in the way of wins and losses. Makes me feel a little more confident as a Red Sox fan, but you know, I think I'm in the majority in a big way when I say we got to see results. Like we like to talk. It's fun to hear the rumors and everything. I like it, believe it or not. I like the rumors. It's
oh yeah, me too.
Fun to let your mind run wild with the possibilities with all these. This you know, treasure trove of prospects and all the money the Red Sox have to spend. But we've been hurt before. Remember, we had Tom Werner, in addition to the full throttle comment, I believe it was the same interview, actually. He said, we have to surround Rafael Devers with players who have high WAR And then, you know, we got excited about that. Oh, Tom Werner knows what war is. He's saying we have to surround Rafael Devers with these players. Didn't really happen. So encouraged, yes, but I'm not giving them any credit until there's actually ink on the paper and new talent in Boston.
You know, Sammy, it's interesting. You say you love the rumors. I do, too. I don't understand all the people that are like, I hate rumor season. Like, I hate hearing about, like, just tell me what the moves are. Like, this is what gets me through the offseason. Let my mind run wild. And I think the thing that allows my mind to run wild is what Sam Kennedy said about the possibility of the team going over the luxury tax. He said that even if the Sox miss on Soto, they'll have, quote, extreme urgency internally to spend elsewhere, quote, even if it takes us over the CBT. So, Pat, when you hear Kennedy say that even if it takes us over the CBT, where does that send your head?
I mean, all of like the vague quotes, he was alluding to Soto. That being said, they're how far underneath the CBT right now? Is it 80 million?
I think it's 65-ish million under the 65-ish. First. 65-ish. But the thing about the CBT is if you're willing to go over, it only hurts you financially and really not that much until you get $40 million over it. So like, if you want to go based off of that, if they're really talking a big game like that, then it's like they could have 100 mil to spend.
Yeah. So let's say we miss out on Soto, which I think is likely. I think I am willing to like put hundreds of dollars down on them getting one of Byrne, Snell, Freak, Rocher. I think that is a 100% guarantee that is happening. That being said, one of those guys does not get you remotely close to the CBT. So in my mind, if that's the case, I'm thinking one or two of those guys, Tanner Scott or Jeff Hoffman and Teoscar Hernandez. And that's if they lose out on Soto. But as far as Sam's quotes go, like Sammy, I don't give him any credit anywhere. Like I'm not like, oh, thank God, finally you gave me what I wanted. No. However, it's incredibly encouraging because normally when Sam talks, it's we want a competitive team. We have internal options. We want to compete for the division. And like it's just these so vague umbrella terms that you can only hear so much. This was the polar opposite. This was we are back. We are going to spend. We're gunning for 90, 95, 100 wins. We don't want to be in the wild card. We're going for the division. We will get an ace. Like it was a total 180 from where we've been the last couple of years. So that's encouraging, but no credit to Sam until anything is done.
Agreed. Let's get into the Soto thing a little bit because that's obviously everyone's favorite topic of discussion right now. The Red Sox are in the hunt for Juan Soto. This isn't like some of the Ohtani rumors in the past where it's like, oh, maybe he'll be interested because of the New Balance headquarters.
Yeah, can we put a kibosh on the people who are saying, oh, this is just for show. This is so they look good. It's not. That you can't. It's like you said the other day, Gordo, what was your metaphor about a house? You're not going to tour a house that you can't afford. The Red Sox aren't going to fly all the way to L.A. to speak with Juan Soto and his representatives just to be like, look, Red Sox fan. Like, you got to be nuts to think they would do that. That would set them back even further in the eyes of the fans. You imagine it comes out, they didn't even make him an offer. Even worse. So sorry to interrupt you. I had to get that off my chest.
Well, you're right. And obviously, like, common sense, Sammy, I agree, tells you that. But you've got hard evidence that also argues that point. Okay. So first let's get this quote out from Sam Kennedy. He was asked if the Red Sox are able to afford another mega contract in addition to Rafael Devers. He said, is that possible? If that's what it takes? Yeah, absolutely. Kennedy said, we're investing more than we did last year. We intend to invest going forward. And the latest on Soto, we had that day where John Morosi said he'd be surprised if Soto signed with the Red Sox. And then John Heyman said that Soto's seeking a strong rapport with his next owner, which I don't think he's necessarily going to get with the Red Sox. I don't know how John Henry might be back. I don't know if he's that back.
What if they're in the meeting and like Sam Kennedy, like, I'll call you every night if you want. And it just freaks, Soto out.
Yeah. So
here's my pager number. Whenever you want it, you got it.
Tom Werner's just like, hey man, let's go Red Sox. Let's go Red Sox.
His voice cracks in the middle. Let's go.
But okay, so that was the negative. But the positive, David Ortiz did like a whole media tour. And I'll give you a couple of quotes, one from Mass Live with Cotillo and McAdam, and one with Baseballs and Boring with Bradfo. On Mass Live, he said, "The one thing that makes me so optimistic is the way the Red Sox are trying to approach him. I mean, the Red Sox are really trying to get this kid. And that motivated me to even go and talk to him and do whatever it takes for him to become a Red Sox." And on Baseballs and Boring, he said about the Red Sox, "They're not faking it. Trust me, I'm trying to do my homework also to see if we can hire him, because that's what Mr. Henry wants. They are trying hard." So, Sammy, your point exactly. It's not fake. The Red Sox, they know financially what it's going to take to sign him. They made a presentation that impressed the kid. And it came out on Sunday from Buster Olney that the offers are going to start coming in this week. So guess what? Like, we're about to start getting into the nitty gritty with this thing. And we might hit a lull on Thanksgiving for maybe like the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, maybe Sunday too. But like, maybe we'll have a couple of days of action here. And then as soon as like Monday, December 2nd rolls around, like, I think it's really going to start to heat up. So like, here we go. Like, Juan Soto, I agree, Pat, you said you don't think it's likely that Soto signs with the Red Sox. I'm still in that camp too. I really don't think it's happening. And my optimism is not related to my expectations for the Red Sox and Soto. It's more so related to my expectations for what they could do after that, which we're going to get into. But let's get a quick update from you guys. Where are your heads at here? Sammy, you got something to say here?
You read my mind. I was going to say, can we get a quick percentage check? I think so I was initially at 5%, then I went down, then back up to 5. I think I'm going to go jump a little bit up into like the 20% range, which is still pretty low when you consider the field is 80. But there was like no juice after Soto met with the Yankees or the Mets or the Blue Jays. Give me a break. So I thought there was going to be all this smoke and people being like, oh, he loved the Yankees presentation. And then
about the Mets offer.
Yeah. Lies about the Mets offer, that which is, now that we know what the rumor was, that the Mets offered Soto $660 million. And, you know, it might have gotten lost in translation. Like, what's his name? Steve Cohen may have floated that number. And then, you know, word travels, you ever play that game Telephone, and then all of a sudden a reporter is saying, oh, there was an offer, when reality was a conversation. Point being, there wasn't much smoke after any of those Soto meetings. The Red Sox one, and you know, this might be a little bit biased because I live in Boston, I heard a lot more about the Red Sox meeting than any of the other meetings. I think it mostly because it was a surprise that it went well, or that the Red Sox even got a meeting. But yeah, I'm kind of at that 20% mark, which, like I said, that's not super high when you consider the field is 80, but it's a lot higher than I've ever been on Soto to the Red Sox. And
do the big poppy quotes do anything for you, Sammy? Is that influencing your percentage going up at all?
A little bit. We'll get to it. There was something else that happened. You might know what I'm talking about.
True. Add that in right now.
Okay. So Sam Kennedy, when he was talking the talk, like we were talking about earlier, when he gave us those good quotes, David Ortiz called him, and you know, Sam Kennedy picks up the phone. We don't know what was said, but Sam Kennedy was smiling, and then he said, after he got off the phone, he said something to the effect of, "Oh, he's very excited with what you're doing." Gordo, do you have the exact quote, or can we just?
So I don't have the exact quote, but basically it was, or Sam Kennedy was doing his interview with Matt, or with Silverman and the Globe, got interrupted by the phone call from David Ortiz, came back from the call like smiling and in a really good mood, said it was Ortiz on the phone, and Ortiz told Mass Live that it had something, that the call had something to do with who we're trying to chase, which obviously means it had to do with Soto.
Yeah, so that could be nothing. That could just be David Ortiz being his jovial self, or it could be something. So I don't know. There's a lot of smoke around the Red Sox and Soto. The Yankees and Soto, which I still think he'll end up back with the Yankees, but it just doesn't seem like they're very in love, you know? Like when the Yankees and Judge were talking, it was like, oh, come on. He's not going to go to the Giants. Everyone talking about the Giants. Come on, it's not going to happen. This one seems much less secure for the Yankees, but we'll see.
Pat, let's hear where your head's at. First, tell me your percentage, and then tell me how much that the David Ortiz quotes and the whole Ortiz call with Sam Kennedy, that I agree, Sammy, with you, means more than the quotes to me. But Pat, give me your percentage and how much does the Ortiz quotes factor into that?
Yeah. So I think last time we talked Soto, I was at 20. I too am jumping a smidge. I'm up to 25.
Wow.
And that's just because of the Mets meeting went well. I think he's going to be a Met. I'm throwing that out there right now. I'm fairly confident he's going to be a Met. The Mets meeting went well. It kind of got brushed over because there was some like ground they made up. But off the bat, there wasn't like a resounding, oh, the Yankees meeting went great. He was like asking about player development. Like he was poking and prodding on the prospect and the farm system. And it was just weird. And Hal Steinbrenner was like, yeah, we'll see about it. And it was just very, very strange.
Can I push back on this a little bit for you guys? Because it's like a first date with these other teams. It's like you're trying to put your best self out there. You're showing them everything you have to offer. It's like, here's all of the great things about our organization. And Soto's like, here's all the great things about me. And it's like, oh, wow, like I like these things about the organization. You're giving us your best, you know, you're painting the best picture of yourself. With the Yankees, he's been there. So it's like, you don't need to give me this whole song and dance. I've been here for a year. Here's what I didn't think I was necessarily sold on. How can you improve those things for me? It's almost like they're actually like 10 steps ahead in the process. If that's how I see it.
Yeah, okay. I agree with you, Gordo. That's why I maintain. I still think he's going to go back to the Yankees. It's just, you know, you would think that you'd hear a little bit more, or like the Yankees act a little bit more positive about the situation. But maybe you're right. Maybe there's less fireworks. I like how we're talking about this like it's like a dating show.
It kind of is.
kind of is. You're paying the guy, or he's kind of a prostitute if you look at it that way. But
damn,
nice in unison, guys. But yeah, no, I don't know, Gordo, that's a good way to look at it. You might be right, but also it's just weird. There's not much smoke. I still think he's going back to the Yankees. I'm just saying it's weird that there's not much came out from that meeting at all, other than that, you know, that wet noodle quote from Hal Steinbrenner.
Pat, go on.
Yeah. So like the meetings, the most noise out of a meeting was the Red Sox one. So that was like a little bit encouraging. I don't know how much weight I put into that. But then you have Sam's comments about like, we're going, we're doing it. And that's encouraging. And then the Poppy stuff. Like Poppy is the key here. I'm not saying Poppy single-handedly is going to get Juan Soto to Boston, but that's a guy that can be in like communication with Juan Soto that is not directly from the Red Sox front office. That can be that kind of soundboard or advice or anything. That's huge. He's been nothing but encouraged and vocal about how much he wants Juan here. There's a Sam Kennedy call, the stuff that he's doing behind the scenes with Juan. It's encouraging. Again, I don't think he's coming here, but I am jumping. I am jumping up to 25%.
All right. I'm going to be the wet blanket here, but I'll start with my positivity and the thing, because I am also, I was at 5% last time. I am also increasing my percentage, just not by as much. The positive things are you look at the Red Sox. What do they have to offer? They have, you know, the best up and coming young talent of any team that's pursuing him. They have the ballpark that is best suited for his swing, more so than Yankee Stadium or anywhere else he's looking. You have David Ortiz and Pedro Martinez, who he idolized as a kid, in the Red Sox corner, hopefully doing what they need to do. David Ortiz sounds like he's definitely doing what's needed to be done. And I don't think that's necessarily a small deal. I think if it were like the NBA and there were max contracts and like you couldn't go above $150 million for the entirety of the contract, and so everyone was going to offer it, I think the Red Sox would have a legitimate chance to get him over every other team. They might be that good of a fit for him as a player and as a person. That coupled with Ortiz's quotes about the Red Sox, he's only seen them operate like this when they really want a guy and they really want him, and it's honestly common knowledge that the Red Sox really want him, and we just haven't seen the Red Sox fully press for a player. So in the past when we've seen them do that, generally they get the guy. Now that's a little bit in the distant past, and we have seen them lose those guys, and we haven't seen them go after a guy that's this coveted for this much money. The reason I'm only going to increase my percentage, so here I've got Mets 44%, Yankees 41%, The field I have is 15. I'll give the Red Sox 8% of the field. So the Red Sox are the most likely. I have them third most likely, but I have it as a distant third. I will always point back to the fact that even if the Red Sox offer him $650 million, the Mets will come back and say, here's 675. If the Red Sox say, here's 675, the Mets will say, here's 700.
Gordo, okay. I was just about to say that was bizarre. I was about to say, what if the Red Sox offer 650 and Mets or Yankees offer 675? At what point do the Red Sox walk away? That's what I'm really, really interested in seeing. Because, I mean, in what point, I guess this is a good question for the three of us. At what point would you be kind of like, all right, I get it, with the Red Sox walking away from Soto? What's the dollar amount? Because I don't know.
It's two different questions for me. What would my walkaway point be? Or what would the point where I would respect and understand the Red Sox walking away?
That second one.
I am understandable if they offer 600 and don't want to go above it. Me personally, I would say go up to 700 and that can be the walkaway point. But I like, if the Red Sox don't feel comfortable going to 675 for one player, I can't hold that against them.
But can you imagine losing out on Juan Soto for a difference of $75 million over 10, 12 years? It's so painful when you think about it that way. I mean, it's a ton of money, but in the scheme of everything, from the context of a contract this size, I don't know.
But where does it stop?
I don't know. That's why it's a tough question.
Pat, what about you? What's the walkaway point for you where you're not going to lose respect for the Red Sox?
I think
if they walked away at 550, I'd be like, all right, come on.
No. I think 600 is respectable. They should expect and offer 650. I think the true cutoff point where you kind of have to, you know, fold, walk away from the table would be like 675.
Okay, so Pat's even lower than me.
Yeah, you can't give a guy $700 million. That's just crazy at that point.
Interesting.
That's Ohtani money.
So
that's
hold on, would you guys
pitches and hits?
Would you guys like, what would your reaction be then if the Sox gave him 700?
Because I wouldn't give a shit. Yes. Dude.
Okay, yeah, I would give a shit.
Like, Gordo, let's make one thing abundantly clear. This is not my money. Pay him $900 million
Okay, if they offered him $700 million and got Juan Soto, I would throw a fucking party. And then the next day I'd be like, okay, how's this going to go?
Here's the thing. It's like there's a certain caliber of player. Like, we talk about not wanting to like pay a guy like Bregman, and we've talked about Adames, like $200 million. There's a difference between overpaying a very good player and overpaying a generational future Hall of Fame talent.
He'll probably go into the Hall of Fame wearing the hat of whoever signs him in the next 2 months.
He will. It's not even a probably, because he hasn't played for any team more than 3 years. He'll have played for 15.
I'm just saying nobody's a superhero. Guys get hurt. Guys fall off. Yeah,
he could opt out.
Yeah, he could opt out. He could get hurt. He could fall off a cliff, and he's not. You know, we'll see. But yeah, most likely he'll go into the Hall of Fame with the cap of whoever signs him. So it's kind of an investment in the history of the team as well. If you want to look at it, if you want to go so far to say that,
I really believe
he'll continue on this path, which I do. So I don't know, man, it's tough. Let me go back a little bit to answer your question. If the Red Sox offered Juan Soto $700 million and he signed it, of course I'm going to be happy. Does it make sense? Yeah, kind of. It's going to hurt, but I'm going to be like 40 years old by the time that's hurting. I don't really care the year 2024, 2025. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. The Red Sox would be a contender for the next 10-ish years, and I'd be happy about that.
I think we all agree, just do whatever it takes to get the guy. I still can't believe we're in this situation where I'm not even like putting fan goggles on or anything. I think the Red Sox legitimately do have the third best chance at him. I know not everyone agrees with that. Like, Jim Bowden put out a piece. I think he had the Red Sox fifth. There's a lot of people who think that the Dodgers or the Phillies or the Blue Jays maybe have a better chance. I confidently put the Red Sox third. I still think it's a distant third, but just to put a bow on it, Sammy, you're at 20%. Pat?
Yeah, around 20.
20 for Sammy, 25 for Pat, 8 for me. I'm not letting myself buy in.
I'm at 20 because I think the field is really weak. It's not that the Red Sox offer got much better or anything. I just think it's Yankees, then Mets, who have that, like, you know, 30, 40-ish percent chance. Then it's the Red Sox, and then the rest is just, like, no shot.
And sorry, not that anyone cares, I'm up to 10.
Okay, Joe, you're right there with me.
I was at 5, went up to 10.
Okay, Joe, I respect that. I almost went to 10. I'm sticking at 8. But I respect your 10. Let's get on to the next thing. We'll talk some pitching here. The quote from Kennedy that will loop into this. He said, we need more pitching. Front of the rotation guys and bullpen. We feel good about our potential core. We really do. A high priority is pitching. Obviously notable because at the end of your press conference and in subsequent podcast appearances right after, Breslow, Sam Kent, like no one would say we need front end starting pitching. Like there were Breslow quotes saying like, hey, we have guys that maybe we think could be front end pitching. We need guys to pitch like front end pitchers is basically how they put it. Now Sam Kennedy's out here saying we need front end pitching. And we had Jeff Passan on the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney basically say that it's a realistic possibility that the Red Sox could go out and get both Max Fried and Garrett Crochet. John Heyman had the Red Sox, Dodgers, Phillies, and Orioles as the teams that are going hard for Garrett Crochet. Jim Bowden, I believe, on his radio show on Sunday morning said that the Red Sox, he basically echoed the McAdam thing and said the Red Sox have discussed Willie Abreu and stuff for Crochet. I don't know if that's his reporting or if that's just piggybacking off of McAdam. Best guess, he's probably just piggybacking off of McAdam, but it was said. So let's start there. I mean, they met with Blake Snell too, so I guess we can loop him into this. Rosenthal said that they met with Blake Snell, and Rosenthal kind of made it sound like their conversations with Snell are ahead of where they were with Fried and Burns, but I don't know if other people have necessarily echoed that. I think we've also heard that Max Fried might be the priority, but it does sound like they're going hard after guys. The question really is, is it one or is it two? That's what I want to talk about here. Is two of these guys, like there's three big starting pitchers on the free agent market. It's Snell, Fried, Burns, and then there's a huge one on the trade market and it's Crochet. And like maybe you could loop in Jack Flaherty with these guys. You could talk other guys, whatever. Is there a possibility in your guys' minds that the Red Sox go out and get two? Are you open to letting yourself believe that that's actually possible?
Possible, yes. Likely, I would lean no. At the beginning of the offseason, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think we all agreed we'd be happy with one starting pitcher addition, one of the big free agents or Garrett Crochet. I'm still in that camp. I really like the Red Sox rotation. I think if you have, you know, take your pick from one of those ace caliber guys, Houck, Bayo, Giolito, Crawford, that's a very good rotation. If they got two, now you're talking top five, top 10 kind of rotation. So no, I don't think they'll get two, but I it wouldn't shock me if they did.
So my thoughts on this are, it very much depends on the Soto thing, because if they get Soto, obviously, like they say, they're willing to go over the tax. Next question is by how much? Are you going to blow past it? Or are you going to, you know, kind of teeter totter the line, and if you're good, you'll pay more at the deadline or something. But if they don't get Soto, I'm finding it hard to see how they can, because like, yeah, I agree, Sammy. At the beginning of the offseason, we said like, get one front end pitcher, fortify the bullpen, and get a power right handed bat, and we're happy. And I agree with that. But to back up these quotes, even to go into the luxury tax, like it's hard to get to that number without getting multiple. Without getting Crochet and extending him and spreading that money across an extension, without getting a Blake Snell or a Max Fried or maybe a Corbin Burns in addition to that, without adding a Tanner Scott, without getting Teoscar Hernandez or bringing back Tyler O'Neill or making some trade, or I don't know. If the truth is, if Jeff Passan speaks, you listen. And if Jeff Passan says it's a realistic possibility that they're going to get Crochet and an ace, that would be a way for the Red Sox to back up their quotes, to back up the reporting, to back up everything that's happened this offseason, all of the talk. If they get two of those guys, their rotation goes from entering last season, if we thought they even had enough starters to fill out a big league rotation, to now one of the premier starting rotations in the American League, it would look something like Max Fried 1, Garrett Crochet 2, Tanner Houck 3, Brian Baio 4, Lucas Giolito 5, assume Cutter goes in the trade for Crochet or something else. That is a ridiculously good rotation. Pat, what about you?
I think they're going to get 2.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, Pat.
No, I do. I think they're going to get 2. I think they're not stupid. Like, the rotation last year was good, but it vastly overexceeded, I think, all of our expectations. No one saw Tanner Houck being an all-star. Baio underperformed. Cutter was about what we all expected. It was just like a middling rotation. They were fine. They weren't great. If you add Max Fried and Garrett Crochet to Brian Baio, Tanner Houck, and Lucas Giolito, that's a top 5 rotation in baseball. And call me crazy. No additions to the offense. Let's say they add to the bullpen, whatever. That rotation in the current offense, if Juan Soto goes to the Mets, on paper, they are the best team in the American League East.
Ooh, I'll push back on that. I think they need more bats to pass Baltimore. They at least need a right-handed bat. At least bring back O'Neill.
Baltimore doesn't even have a rotation.
That's what I'm saying. Baltimore has no rotation.
What? There's the Orioles. We can't be sure that the Orioles are going to sign shit. They're the Orioles. We'll see. Well, I think they'll get someone, but remember who we're talking about.
This is the first year of the new ownership. We don't know who we're talking about anymore.
True. Still, we got to see it. Would it shock you if the Orioles signed Jack Flaherty and that was it?
Specifically Flaherty, yes, because it worked so badly when he was there last time, but I get what you're saying.
Or like Walker Buehler.
Yeah. Buehler or something, or like Manai. Is Manai even? Yeah.
Manai, he's a free agent. Severino.
It wouldn't surprise me if I think they're going to get one of the big guys. I don't think it's going to be Burns. I think they're going to take a step down and end up with like Fried or Snell. I think they get one of those two.
That's not a step down. That's right on par. Come on. Show some respect to our guys, our left-handed guys.
Hey, they're studs, man. But God, Corbin Burns.
Maybe it's like a step stool down. It's like a little step stool.
At least in the present day, their contracts might age better than Burns's.
Yeah.
But Pat likes too. I think it'll be telling. I think
two implies that one of the two is Crochet. Otherwise, Well, actually, no, I take that back.
It's if close. It almost implies that.
Yeah, almost. You could sign 2 of the free agent pitchers and then make a trade for a bat. But,
yeah, like if they, when I say 2, I'm not saying like free Crochet. Like it could be trade for Crochet, sign Shane Bieber. Or it could be Fried and Bieber. Like, it's just any combination of 2 legit additions to the rotation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I think 2 makes it likely that one is Crochet or Bieber, yeah. I'll say. Crochet or Bieber if you're getting 2. One of them.
So I was playing around with the numbers a little bit, and I found a way. Actually, no, I can't say it because it's gonna go into my Who Says No for Wednesday's newsflash. We're doing a Who Says No drop on Wednesday, and I've got a trade proposal. So I can't say what's been going into my cap sheet because it'll give that away. But basically, I found a way to add multiple frontline starters and Juan Soto and Tanner Scott and a right-handed bat. I think I had O'Neill in there, and it's still under the third luxury tax line. I'm not saying that's a realistic possibility. I'm just saying the Red Sox have wiggle room to do a shit ton of stuff. And it's all within the financial realm of possibility if they're going to back up their talk. So let's get into some of the bat stuff. Anything else on the pitching before we move on? Because there was a lot of talk today about a particular bat.
Yes.
So we can gloss over some of the other right-handed options. Just a quick update on the news if you hadn't been watching your feeds or whatnot. Heyman said the Red Sox have inquired on Bregman. I have my doubts about that one. Heyman, obviously the Boris mouthpiece. Robert Murray has the Red Sox, Dodgers, Braves, and Mets as his 4 teams for Willy Adames. That one, I think, is a little bit more realistic. We've talked about that in the past. None of us are fans of the fit. It was interesting to hear how glowingly Robert Murray talks about Willy Adames, and it's not the first time either. A little strange, if you ask me, how glowingly he's willing to talk about Adamas and the Brewers. I don't know what's going on there.
Well, I mean, his profile is super valuable. You have a top-tier defensive shortstop who hits 30-ish home runs, runs fairly well. You know,
he said that the team that signs Willy Adamas will be making the best big money free agent pickup of the offseason, even better than the team that gets Soto.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's a little crazy.
That's nuts. That's false. That's what that is. That is false.
Yeah.
That wasn't taken out of context because I saw the quote. I haven't seen the video. I saw the quote on Twitter. That's definitely not taken out of context because that's like, no, with all due respect, dude, to Robert
said,
Murray.
He said Soto. He said, I watched the video. He said,
bro,
that he'll be the best big money free agent of the offseason, even over Soto. So
I would love to hear the justification for that. I mean, I like Robert Murray, but that's kind of really tough. Nutty.
That, yeah. Like when he's another one of those guys where it's like, if he speaks, you should listen. Like,
out of nowhere,
listen to Robert Murray.
I feel like I didn't know who Robert Murray was like 3 years ago.
He was,
oh, dude, he's great.
He's been around, but he was one of those guys that started as like a high schooler. Like, I remember like when I was in high school, like him and Cotillo kind of broke onto the scene in different ways. But
I feel like Passan kind of came out of nowhere too. Like Passan wasn't a big name reporter 5 years ago. Now he's the guy.
I think I like knew who he was 5 years ago, but like at a certain point in time, he like passed Ken Rosenthal. And like, I don't know how the hell that happened.
Yeah. Yeah, that's big.
But the third one, before we get into the one that'll be the meat of the discussion, was John Morosi saying that if Juan Soto signs elsewhere, expect to hear a lot about the Red Sox and Teoscar Hernandez. Obviously, we've heard plenty about that. I think the smoke, like I just believe that Soto's going to end up having to be the first guy connected to the Red Sox to come off the market, because agents of these players are going to want the Red Sox to be involved, and they're not going to want to have their players sign before the Red Sox truly get involved. So I used to think that Teo was going to sign early. Now I'm not so sure. Do you guys have anything on those three guys, or do you want to get into Nolan Arenado?
Me.
All right, Pat, what do you got?
First, the Bregman noise is not real. It's not real. It's a figment of your imagination. We are not interested in Alex Bregman. That is Scott Boras smoke through his puppet Heyman. There is no shot in hell we are actually in on Bregman. It's not happening. It's not a thing. When it's these kinds of rumors, you see it. It's like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Leonardo DiCaprio meme. And he points. Yeah. Heyman smoke. Not real. Not real. Pisses me off.
We need to clip that. If Bregman signs with the Red Sox, that's clipped.
Can we do like a wham, wham, wham? No, I think the Red Sox are going to, you know, check in on Alex Bregman. He's a good fit on paper. It's just there's one huge issue, and it's that he's 31 on opening day, and he's going to need a long-term contract, and the Red Sox have a ton of young guys in the minors ready to come up. So, yeah, I don't think he'll sign with the Red Sox, but I do think they'll talk to him at least. What if he's like, hey, I had a bad 2024. I want to take a one-year prove-it deal and reclaim my value. What's the difference between 31 and 32, really? Very unlikely. I just think they'll talk to him at least.
No, yeah, I mean, they're going to talk to everybody. Yeah, I agree with that.
Sammy, I think your wires got crossed here. He's asking for 11 years and $300 million.
Well, that's the other thing. That's the other thing. Crazy. He actually, no, Rosenthal kind of implied 350. Like,
dude, that's just at that point, you're just doing the players a disservice spreading shit like that. 350, get the fuck out of here. I think it's more likely that Alex Bregman takes a pillow contract, like what I just said, than him getting 350. Give me a break.
He should do what Matt Chapman did. Take a 1 year deal with the Giants and then parlay.
He's going to get paid.
Extension.
I don't. Okay. He's not going to get 300, but I think Bregman's going to, I was going to say he's going to top 180. Take it. You're happy. He's already got an extension.
And he'll go. Where do we think Bregman's going to go? That's so tough.
Tigers or Astros. Those are my top two.
Damn it. That's exact fucking two teams I was going to say. Tigers.
AJ Hinch.
Same.
Dude, that would be such a Tigers thing to do too.
If I had to pick one, I would say Astros, just because the Tigers already have Baez, and I feel like that contract is going to scar them for years to come. And like, they're that kind of team that'll be like, oh, we're not doing that again. And then it'll just hurt them forever. So I'll say Astros, but my second guess was Tigers.
Ooh, I'm going to throw a sneaky one in. I think if the Phillies move Baum, Bregman makes sense for them.
Oh, he's such a Phillies guy. That's a good one.
You do. Dave Dombrowski always gets his guy, dude.
All right, let me ask you guys a question. Rank these three in order of what you'd like to see the Red Sox sign to what you'd least like the Red Sox to sign. Alex Bregman for 185. No, we'll say Alex Bregman for 200 million. Willy Adames for 180 million. Teoscar Hernandez for 75 million.
Just the reverse order of what you just said.
Yeah. Yeah, it's literally the reverse.
Yeah.
Teo Adames Bregman.
Adames Bregman. I agree.
In a vacuum, if there's no money or years, right now, Bregman fits the Red Sox better than any of those guys.
Like on a 1 year deal. Yes.
On a 1 year deal.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen. There, maybe Bregman takes that pillow deal, but I don't think it would be with the Red Sox. I think it would be that would be like with the Tigers or something if he did like a Matt Chapman kind of thing. I also think that if you want to relate him to Matt Chapman of last year, because that is a very good comparison, I do think Bregman's going to be the guy who's going to sign in like late February or like early March, something crazy like that. And it's going to fuck him up and he's going to start slow and everyone's going to say, told you so. And he's going to get hot in the second half and everyone's going to remember Alex Bregman.
All right, let's get into the last part of this. Sammy, I know this is a passion point for you. All right. So we had. It was interesting. Sean McAdam drops his Some Things I Think article every Sunday. And his main piece in this article was about the bullpen and how they need to improve the bullpen. And then he writes like a couple of tidbits about, you know, like the Bruins and the Patriots, other sports, other things. And then like it was like his last or second to last last point, where he said that the Red Sox are considering moving Devers off of third base and Nolan Arenado is a possible target. So this is something that I want to say the three of us have discussed a lot more in private than actually on the podcast. Sammy, you had a Who Says No with the Cardinals last week, and I thought you were going to go the Arenado route, and you didn't. You went for Helsley. We haven't talked a lot about Arenado on this podcast, and if you look at Red Sox Nation on Twitter, people are really, really down on it. They are really down on it. And
yeah,
Pat, I want to say, has erred on the side of being down on it. Sammy, you have very much been on the side of being positive about it. And my thing has been, always been very conditional. I think I want to give Sammy the first word on this one. Sammy, Nolan Arenado to the Red Sox. Does it make sense? How would it make sense?
Well, I'd say I'm a bit conditional about the Arenado to Boston situation as well. The one thing that would have to happen is to make this make sense. Masataki Yoshida would have to be headed to St. Louis. And that doesn't mean his entire contract in terms of money, but a good chunk of it would have to be headed to St. Louis to make the roster construction work and to make the money work. Because the Red Sox, it's exciting that they're going to spend again, so they say. That doesn't mean they're just going to light money on fire. So they're not just going to take Nolan Arenado's bad contract, slot him in at third base and be like, great, cool, Devers, go DH. There's got to be money coming off the books. And whether that requires the Red Sox to attach a mid-tier prospect, maybe, who knows? But that has to happen. And then also, to a lesser degree, I know Devers, you know, he says he has pride in the third base he plays, which is, you know, a little crazy to me, because if I were terrible at my job, I wouldn't really have pride in it. And I think Devers is a pretty bad third baseman defensively. He's here to hit. If he's really, really angry about it, you know, maybe you have a conversation with him and see what situation makes sense to him. But if he's even like on the fence about it, I think it's a good move for the Red Sox. You slot in Arenado at third base, you get top tier defense, you get, you know, little above average bat at this point in his career. He's not a slugger like he used to be, but he can still hit, and I'm sure he'd get a boost at Fenway to be hitting between, maybe not between, but around Devers, Casas, Duran, a bunch of good bats in that lineup that he'd have the luxury of hitting around. He'd probably see better pitches. And then you get Devers to DH. And it's not just that Devers is a poor defender at third base and you get him off the field. That's great. But he's also had major, major health issues. And that kind of flies under the radar, in my opinion. Got hurt last year in 2024. It was the shoulder. And there was another little nagging thing. 2023, he got hurt. 2021 playoffs, he had like one arm in the playoffs. Sure, you guys remember that. It looked like he was in excruciating pain every time he swings. And I'm not saying taking him off the field is going to keep him healthy, but I don't think it could hurt. So you're improving the defense. You're balancing the lineup with a guy like Arenado who's right-handed and hardly ever strikes out. That's great. And, you know, maybe you're keeping your superstar Rafael Devers healthy. So not my first choice. Certainly not my first choice, but I think it makes a lot of sense. And I can't understand why people think it doesn't make sense. I've yet to hear a good argument for it.
So I'll follow you up on this. I've bounced back and forth about whether I think it makes sense a lot. And in the end, I come down to the fact that it's not my plan A or B, but there's a lot of positives to it. Arenado, he'd improve the defense. He doesn't strike out, 92nd percentile K percentage. And when you've got a guy like Marcelo Meyer coming up, guy like Roman Anthony come up, guy like Christian Campbell coming up, guy like Kyle Teal coming up, you want good influences, guys who have been there, done that, know how to be professional big leaguers and know that their job in part is to get this crop of guys to be good professional Boston Red Sox players who are ready to win the next World Series. And I think Arenado would be really good for that. That said, it's so conditional for me. The first thing is, it's not even Devers on the fence for me. Devers needs to be all the way on board for me. Because if Devers isn't happy and locked in, he doesn't play well. If Rafi Devers doesn't play well, the Red Sox aren't going anywhere. He needs to be all the way on board with the move. Next, it can't be a move to first base. I do not want Tristan Casas being traded. I'm all the way out on a Tristan Casas trade. Not happening. There is just, I have yet to hear a Tristan Casas trade scenario that I like. I want him. I think he's a guy. I just said that. I believe that, but I just took the words out of Patson's mouth. That's what he said.
It's not just that. It's that Devers is a bad defender at third. If you have to teach him a new position, I know it's first base, but you're still having him do another thing. And the point of getting him off of third base is to, one, keep him healthy, and two, let him focus on hitting. So I agree with you, Gordo. I didn't even mention the first base thing because it doesn't even cross my mind. I think that's a wacky idea.
For me, though, it's really just if Devers is first base, Casas isn't DHing. If Devers is at first base, it's because Casas got traded, and I'm out on that. And third is what you said, Sammy. Nolan Arenado, not worth bringing in whatever 50-something million dollars that he's owed over the next 3 years. He's not worth that money, and he's not worth even bringing in if you're adding like a three-year 40-something. He's not worth that. But if you can contract swap with Yoshida, maybe eat a little bit extra. So it's basically like you're paying a tiny bit extra, but you're getting a better fit. Like instead of a left-handed contact guy, you're getting a right-handed contact guy who has a little bit more pop and significantly better defense and leadership. Yeah, like it's a better financial fit to have Arenado than Yoshida. So all of those things, like if those conditions are met, I'm far more open to it. But really, I still am. I'm obviously far more interested in Juan Soto. I am more interested at this point in getting Teoscar Hernandez or Tyler O'Neill to DH. The thing that I don't love about the Arenado possibility here is that it's a three-year commitment. So if you make that happen and Devers DHs, it makes it so that the only way to get Vlad on this team, which is my dream, and that's what I'm going to keep pushing towards, the only way to do it is to either put Devers back in the field after DHing him for a year, or it's to trade Tristan Casas. To me, I think if you move Devers off the position, he's off the position. And the biggest reason to be against this is not, I see a lot of people saying you can't pay $30 million to a DH. You can pay $30 million to a DH. I'm okay with paying $30 million to a DH. I don't give a shit about that. My problem is committing 9 years to a DH. I do not like that. Like the amount of roster flexibility that just crumbles, gets rid of. You do not have flexibility on your roster if you have a DH for the next 9 years. So is Nolan Arenado worth that? I don't know.
Isn't that kind of overstating it, though? Like, you'd still have roster flexibility. It would just be one player less. You just wouldn't have the DH slot every night. It's not like, and also, it doesn't mean Devers Sammy, is never going to play third base.
What I'm saying is, in the offseason, like, if Devers is committed to DH, like, the Red Sox outfield is, let's say they sign with Soto, and it's their outfield is Soto, Duran, Anthony, and you've got Devers at DH. Now, any outfielder for the next 5 years that comes on the market for trade or in free agency, they can't even consider because they're locked into all these guys.
That's Pat. So
Gordo. Poppy was the DH for 14 seasons. We'll be okay with Raffy for 9.
Yeah, but Poppy was under 1 year contracts.
But he was still there for 14 years. They never had an inkling of moving on.
If you told me that Devers was going to be the hitter that David Ortiz was until his age 40 season, I'm okay with it. Mm. Like, if you could guarantee me that.
I just don't think... I agree it makes it harder to be flexible with the roster, but it doesn't make it so you have no roster flexibility. And also, like, the Red Sox are about to be... If these young guys pan out, you're not going to be looking at a ton of big roster changes in the future. You can fill these spots with, you know, middling guys on short-term deals. I like the roster construction argument a lot more in a year like 2024, where there were a ton of young guys, you had a lot of uncertainty on the roster. But if you have those three outfielders you just mentioned, Soto, Duran, Anthony, or even you could slot Rafael in for one of those spots, I don't think flexibility is nearly as important, but I hear you.
It's funny. I went into my, like, spiel about Arenado thinking I was going to talk more positively about it, and in the end I talked so negatively about it just because I hate the idea of moving Devers off third base so much. I like Arenado. I think he's a good fit as a player. I don't know. Pat, I wanted to go to you last because I thought Sammy and I were going to be both positive about it, and I ended up being a little bit more negative. Where do you stand on this?
There's contingencies. Masataka Yoshida 100% has to be going back the other way. That is non-negotiable. 100% that has to happen. If Arenado comes here, I am okay with Raffy being the DH for the next 9 seasons. You have Arenado at third. You reform Colorado's left side of the infield from like 2016 with Story and Arenado. Great defensive left side of the field. Who knows who's playing second base? Christian Campbell could be decent. Vaughn Grissom showed he improved a little bit defensively. Tristan is fine at first. So for next season, having that infield, fine. And Arenado, this is why I think I'm more open to Arenado. Amidst all of the Adames and Bregman rumors, I would much rather have Nolan Arenado on a 3-year, $51 million deal than I would Willy Adames on a 6-year, $180 million.
That I agree with. That I 100% agree with.
So for
that,
me,
I think that's why I've been more positive on Arenado, because I'm comparing it to, like, would I rather Arenado for 3 years or Bregman or Adames for 7 or 8? Yeah, give me Arenado.
And then the other thing too is, it's a 3-year commitment, which for a declining Arenado who's still very good defensively, kind of middling offensively, that's not that crazy. It's a veteran in the clubhouse. It's going to help kind of usher in this new wave of these young guys. It works out well. The other thing here is, if Fried, and you guys can refute this, but I truly believe this. If Fried is their number one target, that is a guy who gives up soft ground ball contact. That does not play well with this current infield defense. Arenado solves that almost completely.
Can I push back a little bit? Because the Red Sox infield defense was... obviously, it's been terrible for a couple of years now, at least. But I think you gotta add context, because, like, people say, "Oh my God, they're bringing the same guys back. How is the infield defense going to improve?" But Casas played what, like 30 something games, 40 something games last year. They had a revolving door at second base all season long that included a ton of Emmanuel Valdez. They had Sidon Rafaela at shortstop for a ton of games, and he didn't grade out very well defensively, even though he looked good, but the metrics didn't support it. And there was a lot of David Hamilton there, not a lot of Trevor Story there. And Devers was more or less okay at third until he got hurt. So, and he's obviously played a lot better there when he's had a good defensive shortstop. if they have a defense that's a consistent Costas at first, Campbell at second, Story at short, Devers at third. Personally, I don't think that's like a bottom five infield defense that we've seen.
No, it's not terrible, but I just, Devers is a bad defender. Like, he's not so bad where it's debilitating and you have to move him, like Kike at shortstop kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But he's bad. And people, for some reason, for whatever reason, Red Sox fans hate to talk about this. It's like you tell them the sky is blue.
I don't think anyone says he's not bad at defense, Sammy.
Oh,
I think,
dude, you would be shocked.
People say they don't want to move him. I don't think I've yet to see people say that he's anything more than meh.
Dude, people say, oh, he's fine. He's not bad over there. I've heard people say we need to give him another year or something. Like, it's been 8 seasons, man. Like, he's not a good defender. And not you, Gord. I'm not talking about you. But there are, I swear to God, if you read the comments on my tweets, there are people who say he's not a bad defender. It's fucking crazy.
I was reading Sammy's replies today, and there were real people. These are not Twitter robots saying that Rafi is about average defensively. And I go, you're not fucking serious. He is by no means. I don't think he is abysmal out there. He is not good. He's not a good defensive third baseman.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Okay.
So
let's see these comments.
If Rafael Devers were an average defensive third baseman, he would be one of the best players in the world. He's so far below. I mean, statistically, we don't even need to discuss it. Look at the metrics. They're terrible. And it's not the balls that he gets to. It's the balls he doesn't get to. You think of like Adrian Beltre. Anything that was hit in his aura, he got to it. It has to be hit right at him or slightly to his left. He can go a little bit to his left. I'll give him
Oh, I disagree with that. I think Devers actually has really good range. With Devers, it's like he misses throws.
No, I think he does, but I think he'll make an amazing play once in a while, and that'll buy him like a month of leash in the eyes of many Red Sox fans. Like,
Manny made a couple diving catches.
Manny played the wall well. Manny played the green monster.
Andrew Benintendi is best known for a diving catch that he made with the Red Sox. He's not a good defender. It's a long season. Oh. You have to look at the grand scheme of things. And again, Gordo, I'm not talking about you. I don't want to make it like you're defending Devers' defense. But in the grand scheme of things, he's not a good defender. There's one outlier season, 2019, that everyone points to as if it's not the most obvious outlier of all time. And he's just not a good defender.
Listen,
why do we lie about it?
We all, the three of us, at least on this podcast, and I think the majority of people who watch these games agree that Devers is definitely a below average defender. The real question is he so bad that you need to lock in a DH for 9 years and now you need to fill third base for the next 9 years instead of needing to fill DH for the next 9 years? Is it worth that? My answer is no. I personally would rather see them bring back Tyler O'Neill or add Teoscar Hernandez than get Arenado. Pat and Sammy, I'm curious, what would you guys rather? Okay, let's order of operations here. Or order of preference. Arenado on the trade that we kind of just talked about, where it's Yoshida and the Red Sox probably have to maybe eat a little bit more money than, because it's basically an even money swap. I don't think the Cardinals are going to do that trade without saving money. So allow the Cardinals to save a little money. Add in a solid prospect.
Mydroth. Okay, add Chase Mydroth. Like okay and blocked. Yeah.
Add Chase Mydroth. So it's Yoshida and Mydroth and eat a little bit of money for Arenado. Or sign Teoscar for 3 years, $75 million, or sign Tyler O'Neill for 3 years, $45 million.
I would go Teoscar, O'Neill, Arenado. That would be my order. And before Pat gives his answer, Gordo, to answer the question you posed, is Devers so bad that you have to move him off of DH and lock him or move him off of third base, lock him into DH? Excuse me. No. But it doesn't have to be at that point for it to make sense. If an opportunity presents itself where you can make the team better on either side of the ball, why not? It doesn't. Then this is the response I get. Like, this isn't the most pressing issue with the Red Sox.
Well, I hate that.
Yeah, neither is the offense. And we're all talking about Juan Soto. For fuck's sake, it doesn't have to be the biggest problem to talk about it. If you have a friggin' broken foot and a broken femur, You don't have to be like, hey, don't look at my foot. Don't look at my foot until my femur is fixed. Like, you want to address both. There's multiple problems. It doesn't matter the scale. They
Make
should
the
all
team
be
better.
Addressed. Yeah, that's
even
said,
if it's not. Yeah, there's several things with the Red Sox where it's like, yeah, I think the biggest thing we all agree is getting a starting pitcher, pitcher. That should be the only move they do this offseason.
Right. Agreed. But anyway, to the, you know, the skinny of it, I don't think you have to move Devers off of third base. I think it would make the team better. I think it might make Devers a better hitter if he's just hitting. Maybe not. I think it would. And that's my answer. So if people think I really want Devers off of third base, no. I think he's a bad defender.
Pat, let's hear your order.
I'm going Teoscar, Arenado, O'Neill.
Ooh.
I think O'Neill.
Interesting.
The health over a 3-year contract really scares me. At least Teoscar's right, I guess, equal right-handed bat, less injury questions. I'm going that order. I'm going Teo, Arenado, O'Neill.
Can't you just you could just like get rid of O'Neill if he's really banged up. He, in the scenario Gordo laid out, I forget the number total that
45.
You gave.
So 15 a year for 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, dude, if he's hurt that last year, you don't have to be like, we can't get rid of this guy. Like they got rid of Pablo Sandoval.
Right there, Sammy. That's going to play right into why Tyler O'Neill is actually at the top of my three. I go Tyler O'Neill, Teoscar Hernandez, and then Arenado. And it's not to shit on the Arenado thing. I actually do like it. I like Arenado. But the reason I have O'Neill first over Teoscar, it was strategic why I asked it that way. Because $75 million versus $45 million. If for 3 years, $45 million, the Vlad dream can stay alive. Like...
I love how everything leads back to Vlad.
It all ties in. If there to bring it back to Sam Kennedy's quote about being able to add a mega contract, there are three players that I see as realistic 10 plus year contract options. It's Juan Soto, Vlad Jr. next year, or Roman Anthony extension. That's it. So until Vlad is extended by the Blue Jays, every little bit of my roster building is going to consider leaving DH open so that you can have Vlad Jr. take that spot.
What if Vlad goes to the Angels?
I can't see that. That'd be an Angels move.
Let's say 2 weeks from now, Juan Soto is a Met and Vlad Guerrero just signed a $330 million extension. What happens to you? What happens to you? You mentally, what happens to you?
Hey Oscar, that's so depressing. You don't get Juan Soto. You don't get Vlad Jr. Teoscar.
I mean, I wouldn't have a white whale at the moment. I would just have to hope they get multiple pitchers in Teoscar. It would be tough. I don't like not having a white whale. I immediately flipped my white whale from Soto to Vlad because I thought Soto was so unrealistic, and now I guess it's realistic. They're both my white whales. But yeah, O'Neill, Teoscar, Arenado, because I think that's the order of the ease you'd have offloading one if you needed to, if Vlad was on the table. That's all we're going to have time for today. We don't have time for enough said. We've been going so long here. Just little scheduling, whatever. It's Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone this week. We're not going to have a second normal full-length episode for you guys this week. We're going to be celebrating with our family and friends, but we are going to have a Who Says No, as I alluded to earlier in the episode. We're going to have that dropping for you guys on Wednesday. It's a good one. It's my proposal. So it'll be a good one, and we'll be back to our regularly scheduled episodes. We'll get you a full length one Sunday night, dropping Monday. And that is really going to be when stuff starts to heat up. The it's going to be quiet over Thanksgiving. It always pisses me off that I get no rumors on my phone during the holidays. I'm that addicted to it. But before we go, before we tap out of here, before you go do something else, remember, hit the subscribe button. Wherever you're listening, subscribe, rate 5 stars, all of your podcast platforms. Go to YouTube, and we're on the WEI channel on the Playtesty playlist there. So hit the thumbs up on the videos, subscribe to WEI, find us on the socials, at Playtesty on both Twitter and Instagram. Man, free agency, baby. Hot stove season. We have so much shit to talk about. It is awesome. This is so much better than other years. This is great. Hopefully they actually come through. But for Sammy, for Pat, for Joe producing, it's Gordo here for Playtesty. This has been episode 154. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.